Hi, good morning, everyone in Greenwich, Connecticut. And this morning, I have Joan London on the radio. I'm so excited. How are you, Joan?
I'm terrific, Hillary.
And let's, you know, say, as the longest-running female host ever on early morning television, Joan London was the co-host of Good Morning America for 2 decades, and you were an award-winning journalist, best-selling author, and a vocal health and wellness advocate, right?
Yes.
In 2014, you found yourself facing breast cancer diagnosis, which you immediately turned into a mission to educate and inspire others about prevention, treatment, and survival. And you did this by journaling on your website, sharing your battle, and in your latest book, Had I Known, seeking out ways to promote change and advocating for other survivors on Capitol Hill. You're also now a special correspondent on the Today Show.
Yeah.
And for reports on health and breast cancer, and you actively communicate with Americans daily, both through social media and on your website, joanlondon.com. Everybody knows you, so I don't even, you know, you don't even really need an intro, but I'm doing this because it's important. And you are a mother of 7 children. So let's talk about the last 2 years of you know, what you've gone through. I can't even imagine.
You know, you hear those words, you have cancer, and it doesn't really make any difference what you're doing in your life at the time or what big plans you have. Everything changes. Everything just comes to literally like a screeching halt.
Yeah.
And you're thrown into this world that if you haven't had a friend or a relative go through it, it's a whole new vernacular that you don't know anything about. And you know, it was a year. I want to say the good part of it, because I don't want to make it scary to everyone, because it happens to so many women.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I literally get calls every couple of days from friends who are either diagnosed or have a friend, and could you talk to her? And many times, I talk to more strangers during the week than you can imagine. But The good news is that there has been so much money that's gone into funding breast cancer research, thank God, and it's still coming in. We have found wonderful treatments that mean that if you catch it early enough, 95% will be treated and cured. That's a great rate.
95% is...
It really is.
Yeah.
And what that means is that if women, if we, you know, we're just buttoning up October, and everybody knows it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and some people criticize that because they say, oh, you know, we don't just have it in 1 month, we have it all year.
Mm-hmm.
But it is this amazingly concentrated outreach by the media and medical community to try to reach as many women as possible to educate them about their breast health and their risks so that everyone understands. Because, I always feel compelled to be incredibly honest, because it's the only way you really help people. I'm an interviewer. I'm a journalist. I should have known better. And I didn't really fully grasp all the different risk factors that I had because of one thing. I didn't have it in my family history. So I lived with this kind of nonchalance, like, you know, that 1 in 8 women will get breast cancer, but not me.
Yeah.
Because I don't have it in my family history. Had I known that less than 15% of women who are diagnosed with breast cancer ever had a family history, I wouldn't have walked around feeling so immune, and I might have made some different decisions. You know, had I known that some of the risk factors were starting a menstrual cycle early, okay, that's me, having children after the age of 30. Well, that's me and a lot of other women today. Taking HRT, you know.
Hormone replacement therapy drugs.
I took hormone replacement therapy for over a decade. You know, and I'd like to think that had I known all these other risk factors, had I known the seriousness of the link between HRT and breast cancer, that maybe I would have made a different decision.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, we all hate the symptoms of menopause, but are you going to put yourself at risk for breast cancer?
Right.
And, you know, I my doctors all say, don't blame yourself. That isn't necessarily what caused it, but it could have contributed to its growth. And then the last thing is, I didn't know anything about dense breasts. The only thing I knew is that every time I went for a mammogram, they would always call me back in for more pictures. And you know what you do when that happens. Like, you freak out.
Yeah.
And you say, oh, my God, did you see something horrible? And they always would say the same thing. No. It's just that you have such dense breasts that it's just hard to see things.
Well, now, I remember going to WestMed and having a mammogram, and I wanted to know right away. And what I loved about them is they call you that afternoon. They call you. And the guy called and said, good news. And you know, that was awesome.
Good news that they didn't see anything.
Exactly.
Okay, so herein lies the problem.
Mm-hmm.
The caveat to that call, and some people just get a letter, and we call them the happy grams.
Yeah.
From what we could see, those are the words that should worry you.
Mm.
From what we could see, there are no changes and no abnormalities.
Mm-hmm.
But if you read all the way down to the bottom of that letter, well, in the past, we never got this extra information, but the report the doctor got, down at the bottom, it said, if this woman has very dense breasts, because if you have very dense breasts, what happens is dense tissue shows up as white
mm-hmm.
on a mammogram, and so does cancer. So if you have really dense breasts, it's kind of like looking for a snowball in the middle of a snowstorm. They can't see it.
Mm.
So women, for decades, have not been told this. Imagine going to get a blood glucose test because you think your cholesterol is high. And you get the test and you call for the results, and they just say, well, we can't really give you the results. You know, it doesn't look like anything's probably wrong, but we can't give you the results.
Can't imagine.
You can't imagine
right.
that. Well, but for decades, we've gone to get a mammogram, and they have failed to inform us, the patient, who scheduled it, who went in, who took the exam, who paid for the exam. We haven't been getting that information that our doctors have been giving. And, you know, let me just say it this way, because a lot of people say, well, why don't our doctors tell us then? Why don't the referring physicians, usually gynecologists,
mm-hmm.
talk to us about this? I think the safest answer to say is that they've known that for decades insurance probably wasn't going to pay for that ancillary test.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, why step in the mud puddle? Why get involved in it? Like, once you say, you know what, I think you need another test, and then the insurance won't pay for it, now the liability comes back and lands in the lap of the referring physician.
Yes.
So consequently, they have just made a decision to stay out. And we're the ones that have been at risk. I cannot tell you how many women I hear from week in and week out on social media and in my own life that say, I went for a mammogram and I got a clean mammogram, and like 3 months, 6 months later, I felt the lump.
Mm.
But it couldn't be seen on the mammogram. I think over the last 2 years, this was the overwhelming issue that I've heard from women across this nation, is that they were absolutely stunned to hear that they could go in and get a mammogram and walk out thinking they were perfectly fine when they really had breast cancer that just couldn't be seen. And just so we all understand the numbers here,
mm-hmm.
40% of American women have dense breasts. 40%. That's almost half of all American women who think that the mammogram is the end-all, be-all, and it's not. But it is, by the way, it's our gold standard.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a perfect test, but it's our best test, and the new 3D test is even better, and everyone should ask to get the 3D mammogram because it sees exponentially more. But you have to know whether or not you have dense breasts, and this is something that I don't think we've ever been told as women, that in addition to knowing our blood pressure and our cholesterol level,
mm-hmm.
we also need to know our breast density, and the only way you find that out is by getting a mammogram.
Yes.
It's not how you look or how you feel or how lumpy your breasts are or how big or how soft or hard they are. It can only be seen in a mammogram. And the day you have that mammogram, you have to ask that question, do I have dense breasts? And you tend to have dense breasts more when you're younger. This is part of the reason why they don't start mammograms early. They wouldn't be able to see anything.
Mm-hmm.
And as we get older, when we get into our 30s and our 40s and certainly beyond 50, normally, I mean, in 60% of women, the breast becomes more fatty. And gravity starts in. But also, it's very easy to see cancer in a fatty breast. So everybody's
going to stand. That's good news.
Yeah, 60% of women have fatty tissue, and that's really easy to see cancer in. But it's imperative that women ask.
Yes, very. And I have a local nutritionist on a lot, and she worked a lot with Dr. Barry Boyd, and she said that's so important. And she said, did you have a ultrasound as well? And I said, no. And she said, it's
so important.
But
if you don't have
important.
Dense breasts, you don't need an ultrasound.
Right.
It's a good thing to find out. But if you have dense breasts, everybody listening, if you hear those words, you have dense breast tissue, then you need to have an ultrasound, or sometimes it's called a sonogram, mm-hmm. as an ancillary test. And it goes state by state as to whether insurance pays for it. I believe here in Connecticut it does, but in New York, I know starting January 2017, the insurance providers will be required to pay for it. You know, it's kind of like the dominoes falling. Mm-hmm. As we've fought this battle, as women have fought this battle, we now have 27 states across the country that have passed some kind of legislation requiring that radiology labs inform women mm-hmm. about breast density. But not all of them will, first of all, the wording is wildly different from state to state. And in some states, it's weak or really confusing. But not that many states have passed legislation that requires insurance companies to pay for it. And the crazy thing is, Hillary, if they just pay for that test, it's a relatively small amount. It's under $1,000. Mm-hmm. If they'd pay for that and make sure that women find it really early, they could avoid paying hundreds of thousands of dollars for lifelong medication that women will have to take, or in my case, you know, extended aggressive chemotherapy.
Yes, and I can't even believe that they could see it earlier and you know, because at that point it's growing and it could be, you know, stage four in the next, right?
Once you get to stage four, then we're trying to keep women alive. I mean, do we really, I remember I was talking with a Dr. Nancy Capello, and she started a great website, and she's a Connecticut resident, mm-hmm. and if you haven't had her on, you should.
Okay.
It's called rudense.org.
Okay.
Go on that site. You will learn anything you ever needed to know about breast density. You'll see a map of the United States. You'll be able to click on that state, and you can see what kind of legislation. We were the very first state, thanks to Nancy, the very first state in the country to pass legislation requiring radiology labs to inform us if we had dense breasts and if we needed an ancillary test.
I'll check that website out and have her on. That's really important. And so let's talk about when you were diagnosed. I heard the audio, and which is
of the book.
I love listening to you. You know, it's almost like you're reading. You know, it's great because you're reading it, so it's actually better.
But you know what, Hillary? When I went to after I wrote the book, then you go into a studio and it takes about a week to read the book into an audio version. But it's not just reading it. I got to tell you, it was so emotionally draining because it was really kind of reliving it.
Mm.
I'm sure you probably heard that.
Yeah, I could tell. Well, and I was listening, and I could just feel, you know, when you were talking about, you know, you didn't want your children to know, you didn't know, you know.
My older three girls, I'll tell you, you know, I called them right away. And my husband, I mean, I've just got the greatest husband, Jeff.
So nice.
They were with me every step of the way, and I'm like that type A girl, you know, that's mm-hmm. like, I don't need you to open the door for me. I'm just fine. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And, you know, I said to them, you don't have to go with me and sit through all of these infusions. And they were like, oh, no, we're with you whether you like it or not. We're going to be there with you. And, you know, and of course, I'm glad they were. And even my younger kids, you know, I have twins who are 13 and twins who are 11. So they're in the 6th and 8th grade in middle school mm-hmm. here in Connecticut. It's such an easy age. Just wait, Hillary.
Oh, really? I'm in the 4 and 2, and I'm right in it. But
you know, even the younger ones, the biggest, the most perplexing, agonizing decision I think that I had to make, believe it or not, was whether or not I was going to do that shot for the cover of People magazine, bald.
Mm.
And it's because, you know, as a mom, you know, you're like a lioness. You want to protect your children. And they were going into a new school, and I know that sixth graders don't read People, but their parents do.
Yeah.
And I thought, what if one of them says to my child, oh, is your mom going to die? And I even was concerned about how my husband would feel about the whole world seeing me like that. But I got them all together, and I said, I can't do this without you guys being a part of it. So I'm going to put it up to a vote. And then if you guys don't want me to do it, that's it. And this is the night before the photographers and everybody from the magazine came into my home.
Mm-hmm.
And my Max, I remember he raised his hand and said, Mom, Dad already briefed us on this. You can help save lives. You've got to do this.
Oh, that's so sweet.
And they all, it was a resounding vote to do it. And it was hard. I mean, it was the first time I really took off my wig and and said, this is what it's all about, but this is what fighting cancer looks like, and I'm going to fight it, and I'm going to be over it. And for every call I get, like a call I got a couple days ago from a woman who had just been diagnosed, I didn't know her. I was calling her. She was a friend of a friend of a friend. And she said, I have to tell you, when I heard the words, you have cancer, the first image that popped into my head was you on the front cover of People magazine. And not you, not the whole picture, just the smile on your face. The smile on your face was what was embedded in my mind that said, you can do this. And you know what? That made all the agonizing that I went through all worth it.
Yes. Well, and, you know, you always, when I was hearing the book, you were always in action. You know, it sounded like sat around and thought too much. You had support. You were always moving. That's the impression I got, that you didn't just stop.
Well, you know? That's probably one of my biggest pieces of advice.
Mm-hmm.
If you hear those words, get informed, put together your team of people. I mean, as soon as you get breast cancer, you get this army that's kind of taking care of you and helping you fight it. Try to put together a support group. If you don't have the kind of family support I had, there are amazing organizations all over the state of Connecticut with support groups, like with Greenwich Hospital and all of the other hospitals. They all have amazing support groups that you can tap into. Don't do it alone. And also, I would say, try to not curl up in a ball and wait for it to happen to you. Like, wait for the nauseousness and everything else to happen, because otherwise, by 10 o'clock, you can ask yourself, do I have the headache? Do I have this? Do I have that? And before you know it, you've got them all.
Yeah.
But I was really kind of proactive, and I got up every morning, and I tried to do like 30 minutes of something. And some days I didn't feel like doing very much, but I did something. And then I think we've spoken about this before as well, is that I went on a no wheat, no dairy, no sugar eating program. And I must admit, when the nutritionist, who, by the way, is Dr. Rob Zembrowski up in Westport, and he wrote a great book called Rebuild.
I'm going to get the book.
Yeah, he'd be a great guest. He's brilliant. He went through non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. The guys at Yale, the doctors said, you're not going to live through it, and he did. And he now consults with other people who have cancer or who have immune problems. And he put me on this eating program, and I got to tell you, Hillary, I didn't have all of the awful side effects that you hear about from everyone. And it's because I was eating clean. I was eating real nutrient-dense proteins, you know, whether it was chicken. I mean, sometimes they wanted me eating red meat because, you know, just because your red and your white blood cell count go down so drastically low. And I ate, you know, vegetables. Not, you know, I was kind of cautious with fruits because and the reason why is because it can spike your insulin level, and that also encourages the growth of a cancer cell. But as you're hearing, I educated myself. I read these books. There's another wonderful book called The Anti-Cancer Diet, and it's by a Dr. Servan, Servan-Schreiber, Schreiber, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
That book, too, is it's a doctor who got cancer. They are wonderful books, and they teach you how to go and shop and avoid, really, the American diet, because the American diet is like fertilizer.
Yeah,
for
it's
cancer.
Really bad. I'm trying to get my husband on board for an better you know, what did he make the other day? He made shepherd's pie. I'm like, stop.
But, you know, and it's okay, but there are wonderful. You can do shepherd's pie
mm-hmm.
with real foods.
Yes.
And, I mean, I swapped out all my milk. I swapped it for almond milk. I don't do regular butter. I do Earth Balance. I don't do regular ketchup. I go to, you know, Whole Foods and get the ketchup without the sugar. You have to be careful even at Whole Foods. There are like 20 spaghetti sauces, but only about two or three of them actually don't have sugar in them, even
wow.
at Whole Foods. So you have to become this master label reader. But when you cut out processed foods and you really try to limit your sugar and your dairy intake and your wheat intake, first of all, you will find that your percentage of body fat will immediately drop, which I think every woman would like.
Everybody loves that.
You know, it's so funny because when you get breast cancer, all of a sudden you become this amazing clean eater and
mm-hmm.
you start exercising, when, of course, the experts will tell you that if you did those things beforehand, maybe you could avoid the cancer.
So, yeah, exactly. So if you eat clean now and listeners...
Well, there are so many things that go into it because yeah. I'm always cautious when I say that because, you know, there will be the woman out there who says, oh, great, so now you're blaming me. And
mm-hmm.
it's not a blame game. It's
yeah.
really a game of educating yourself so that you empower yourself to know as much as you can. And I didn't empower myself prior to my diagnosis because I was nonchalant about it. I'll admit, I didn't do self-exams. But I'm here to say now that every woman should do self-exams for one reason, so that you know what your normal feels like.
Yes.
So that if all of a sudden something doesn't feel right, you would even have the objective, level field to be able to judge whether it was something unusual. So it's really important that you do that. It's really important you ask the question and know whether or not you have dense breasts so that you know whether you need another test.
It's very important, and people can save their lives.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Let's talk about, a lot of people, I think, isolate when they get a diagnosis like that, and you did the opposite, and I think that that's what has made you, you're busy. I think that's really the takeaway from this is that you really just surrounded yourself with supportive people and love and took care of yourself and received from people. And I remember hearing on your audio, the person that you want to be friends with is the one you can call at 4 a.m, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think...
But I also am very cognizant that not everyone has support systems like that.
Yeah.
I heard from a woman after I was on Access Hollywood, and I was asked what was the best thing that got you through this, and I said my incredible supporting family. And I had a woman on social media say to me afterwards, I'm really happy for you that you're doing so well and you've had this incredible family support, but just remember there are a lot of us out here who are single moms going through this, fighting this disease, but still trying to get food on the table at night for our kids, and we're going through it alone. And when I hear you say that, it makes me sad.
Oh.
And I got to tell you, I sat here with tears rolling down my face when I read that, and I've never forgotten it, ever. And it made me really cognizant of what I say, the power of words, and to be careful how I, you know, what I say in interviews like this with you, and that I'm aware of the fact that there are so many women out there who need the support of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, fortunately, I mean, 20, 30 years ago, women didn't talk about this. They hid this from everyone. They didn't tell even friends. And the fact that, you know, really Betty Ford is the one that came out and talked about it publicly And she kind of made it okay to start talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think today it's hard to say the word easier, but I think it makes it more palatable, you know, for women to go through this when they can talk about it, when they can share their stories on social media and hear back from other women who went down this path, walked that path, and can share with them. I've learned so much. You know, I mean, the AC round that you have to go through sometimes is really horrible. You get these sores on the inside of your mouth. And on social media, a woman said to me, my doctor had me put ice chips in my mouth right before they infuse you, and it kept me from getting ice chips. Well, guess what? The next time I went, I did that. No more sores in the mouth. I mean, I gained so much information from total strangers who cared enough that they felt they got through it, they survived, and now they were, you know, extending that hand to help the next woman through.
Yes, and, you know, you've been a power of example to so many women out there. And, you know, if listeners, if you haven't read the book, it's called Had I Known. And had you known, you might have done a little bit of things differently, right?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
And one of the things I thought was interesting is your dad was a cancer doctor.
Surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up in a house where we heard about the fight against cancer all the time. And, you know, I was a little too young to really understand. I do know that everywhere we went, these people would come up to us, you know, whether it was in a restaurant or out on the street, and they'd often embrace my dad. And I always heard the words, thank you, doc, for saving my life, for saving my wife's life.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they would bend down, you know, to get down on my level as a little 10 or 11-year-old, and they would say, do you realize, young lady, how important your daddy is to our family?
That's so sweet.
And believe me, now I do.
Yes.
You know, now I, the wonderful, wonderful doctors, and I mean, I had the most extraordinary support system at Greenwich Hospital, and with Dr. Barbara Ward, my cancer surgeon, and Dr. Dickerman Hollister, my oncologist. I mean, they were just, and all the nurses.
Mm-hmm.
May we just say something about the unsung heroes?
Yes.
The ones who, you know, where you say to everybody else, says, how are you doing? And you say, fine, 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 I'm just fine. But when you get in there, the nurses say, okay, I know you're telling everyone you're fine, but I know you're not.
Mm.
Let it loose. And they take it. I don't even know how they go home at the end of the day. They're just so extraordinary. I can't say enough about the nurses in the oncology center and in the radiation center and at the hospital.
Well, it's so supportive and so nice to hear that the nurses are supportive like that, because you needed that. You know, you're probably putting on a face for everybody, and then
yep,
you can actually go in and be yourself for...
They let you know you don't have to put on your face for them, and that's what's ingrained. That's what makes a nurse so incredible at what she does, or he,
yes. And it was so great having you on to talk about your book, and so encouraging to listeners, and get out there and get the book, right? And look forward to seeing you out and about. And you've been listening to the Healthy Hillary Show on 1490 WGCH with Joan London. Thank you again for coming on, Joan.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Hillary. Bye-bye.
Bye.